Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome in. What is today? Tuesday afternoon edition is Guerrilla Sports Off Ice. I'm Jesse Montaño. I'm going to be joined by Megan Angley here in just a moment. Oh, we got to be back at the rink. We got to see some hockey. We got to see some hockey games this past weekend. So we're going to unpack everything from the rookie showcase. And then we're going to start to look forward. But it's not that far forward because we're getting back into the swing of things with Avs main camp starting tomorrow. So we're going to start to unpack all of that. As always, guys, want to start out the show by reminding you about our great friends over at Refi Jet. Did you know that you could refinance your auto loan? Well, with Refi Jet, you could save around $150 every month, all with just a soft credit pull and zero hassle. Lower payments, flexible terms, maybe even some cash back in your pocket from your car's equity. Refi Jet does the work. You get the savings. Start today at refijet.com, the faster, easier way to refinance.
Hello and welcome in.
Please do not leave your luggage unattended.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. How's it going Tuesday afternoon? I'm Jesse Montaño. She is Megan Angley, and I'm addressing this right off the top. Someone got into the chat last week and made a comment about how you and I end up matching a lot. And we were like, oh, it's not planned. It's genuinely not planned, and it is, it's getting funny.
It's uncanny.
It's uncanny at this point that we keep showing up wearing the same or very similar colors. Megan, how's it going this morning or afternoon? No, this morning. This morning.
Yeah, it's still morning-ish. It's going really well. I went down to the Springs really quickly yesterday, so I got to see my parents and my brother. And so I came up this morning a little bit early, but I'm in a good mood. I got to see some family. I got to watch some rookies. It's been a good last couple of days.
I was going to say, I was laughing because Megan was the first one into the rink. She was the last one to leave all weekend. If you need to get Megan places, put some prospects there and she'll show up.
It is kind of crazy, even just asking more questions in post-game. Stop.
You can just, Megan,
I'm aware of it.
Rookies, prospects, development, you can tell that's your passion. That's where it lies. And I absolutely love it. And it's why we are so lucky to have you here at Guerrilla Sports. And I'm so lucky to have you here because over the course of an 82-game season, especially with everything we got going on here at Guerrilla, it's a lot to stay on top of. And Megan, I really do think you are the authority on the Colorado Avalanche prospect pipeline. I don't even think anyone else comes close to touching your depth of knowledge on it. And so that's how we're going to start the show. We are going to get into a little bit of what to expect here in the next coming days as the Avs hit the veterans hit the ice themselves starting Thursday. We got media day tomorrow, which is always good. And hey, we even got to chat with a couple guys yesterday out at the golf tournament. Heard from pretty much anyone who got an extension this summer with the Avs we spoke to yesterday. Parker Kelly, Brock Nelson. Snubbed Olympian Parker Kelly. And then we talked to Josh Manson as well. So it was good to hear from some of the guys and we're going to hear from Nate and Gabe and Kale, Devon. I believe we're going to hear from Brent Burns tomorrow as well. And then of course, Jared Bednar will make his official first availability of the season. And then it's funny, Megan, I was talking to my folks yesterday and the preseason being shortened the way it has, the emphasis on let's get to the regular season and get going. This used to be, damn near a full week of rookies on the ice and then the rookie showcase and then pretty much a full week, 5-6 days of veterans on the ice before the first preseason game.
Right.
No, vets get on the ice Thursday. First games are Sunday. And it's like, let's go, let's get after this. So it's going to start moving quick starting tomorrow.
I appreciate it.
I do too.
I can tell everybody's ready for it. I think a lot of it has to do with the way the season ended for the Avs last year. It was abrupt. And I think everybody had the sense of there was so much more left to give with last season's team that it's going to pick up where it left off in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And even with, you know, some guys maybe not available to start the year, this is still a really complete team that I think is hungry and coming in with a chip on their shoulders. And I'm really excited about it.
Brock Nelson, I you know, multiple times unprompted brought up, you know, we should have gone further. I saw what this team can do, and it's why I wanted to come back. And I asked him something that you and I had kind of speculated on earlier in the summer. I said, was, you know, what you're talking about and the heartbreak of that loss and, you know, going through something like that with this group, was that part of, hey, I want to come back here and finish what we started? And he said, yes. Like, you know, we felt we had something special and that it got cut short. And we're trying to run it back this year. I think what you just said, like, this group's going to have a chip on their shoulder and they are going to be ready to get things going starting tomorrow.
They're trauma bonded.
They are trauma bonded. But Megan, before we get into all that, I want to unpack everything from this past weekend because it went quicker. We only got one day of on-ice activities before the game. So, you know, it was maybe a little bit harder to do some of the, you know, evaluating that we have done in the past, like on, you know, practice days and things
like
that. Speak
for yourself. I'm just kidding.
Didn't have as many opportunities. How about that? What did you see? What did you like? Only two games out of the, you know, out of the tournament, as opposed to what we've seen in the past, you know, three or four, but broad strokes, and we'll get into some specifics. What'd you see?
Well, only two games to evaluate does make a difference, actually. Mm-hmm. It's fewer reps than getting to watch these teams, and the caliber of competition was so varied from one to the next, like seeing Utah fall 8-1 to Vegas and then the Avs rookies playing Vegas the next day and seeing it be a one goal game with a goal waved off late in that game. It makes me feel really good about this group. Then they had a really strong effort against Utah to open up this thing. I think they really met their opponents where they were at in terms of energy, compete, and provided just enough more in areas where they could. And so obviously, one of the predictions I had was that they're not going to be offensive Harlem Globetrotters on the ice. Mm-hmm. And I think that came to fruition a little bit. But what also came true was the work ethic and the fact that they're not going to get outworked and they're going to be very strong defensively. And so I think against a more experienced Vegas team, the inexperience on behalf of these rookies was exposed a little bit. But they still played with a lot of polish and a commitment to being responsible players on the whole, that it really punctuated the difference in the prospect pool this year compared to the last and years past. And there's two things that stood out to me. One, there are only two players that are 5'10 or under that are on this rookie tournament roster. And they're Sean Behrens and Gavin Brindley. And those are high end, you know, high second round picks that make up for some of what they might lack in size in being very smart and competitive players. And so I thought the size representation in the tournament was very interesting, just in terms of, I think we're in a new age in terms of what development is doing, what they're looking for in their prospects. So these guys maybe don't jump off the page at you as like top six future NHLers, but they can fill a bottom six role in the NHL one day because of what they're doing right now at this level. And I call it the blue collar habits. In the article I wrote, I referred to a lot of these guys as blue collar tryhards. And I want to make it very clear that I mean that so affectionately, but it's because they brought in a lot of players to this camp that work their butts off. And that was my big takeaway, is there's a lot of Jared Bednar guys here that are only 19, 20 years old. So they don't need to be NHL ready right now. And a lot of them were raw. But I think internal options for the future exist within this group. And I'm excited about that.
Well, you know, as we were walking down to the studio, from upstairs, I mentioned to you, I said, because we were talking about that, you know, it definitely feels like there's some waned interest this year in prospect stuff, and it's a result of where the Avs are at, where they've been consistently now for coming up on a decade here of, you know, just kind of sustained excellence in the playoffs, cup contender, you know, with a Stanley Cup championship mixed in there. That's where a lot of people's focus is, and I said, and you know what's funny about that is I actually think this is one of the more, I think this is a more exciting group of prospects than people give it credit for. In the sense of, like, there's not a lot of blue chip guys here, you know, where it's, hey, that's a guy that we really think could be a, you know, a first line wing, a, you know, a 1C, a 2C. But I think there's a lot of guys that have NHL upside here to contribute in some fashion. And, you know, you and I were talking, you know, in the lead up to that first game against Utah about, like, what's this group going to, you know, give us? And we were talking about, I believe it was two seasons ago, in Vegas, where LA basically just sent their American Hockey League team to the rookie tournament. And it was a bunch of guys who you were like, who, you know, who's that? Who's this? I don't recognize it. But they beat the crap out of everyone because it was just an older, more mature, you know, group. And while the Avs prospects didn't necessarily do that, that was what I felt like I saw out of them, you know, and what I was able to watch this weekend was just more mature, looked a little bit more pro ready. And like you said, blue collar, hardworking, you know, willing to get after it, willing to get physical, get in on the forecheck. I just think that I saw a lot of, like, pro habits out of the Avs group this weekend.
They showed a lot of maturity, and that was emphasized when they played Vegas, who had a lot of players, especially on the forward side, with full seasons in the AHL under their belt. Like, Preshepov and Bradley have near complete, you know, AHL seasons under their belt as well. But that was kind of the most veteran representation for them in this tournament. The other guys who've gotten in AHL games are like Hank Kempf and Connor Kelly and Garrett Pike, and they have not played very much at the AHL level, whereas comparatively there are just so many more AHL experienced players on the Vegas side. And I bring this up as a positive, though, that in trying to match up to that experience and maturity on the Vegas side, I thought a lot of these very young players who are going back to their major junior teams this year, right? Mm-hmm. They showed a lot of maturity. They could go toe-to-toe with these guys, and that's significant because it wasn't just that Vegas was experienced. Some of them had familiarity playing with each other. They were very vocal on the ice, on the bench. The coach was calling out things to them, and so they were just a little bit more familiar with each other, and it showed. You could see that with the Colorado rookies. A lot of these guys are very newly playing with one another. There was maybe a lack of communication at time. And again, that sounds like a criticism, but it's more so to have the result than bringing this within one goal and pushing until the final buzzer in that Vegas game. It stands out to me as significant that these are really mature, smart, responsible players. Like, even by the end of the tournament, how Alex Gagne held up, coming straight from college, I think they answered a lot of questions I had about where some of these players are at. And again, a lot of them still pretty raw, but very intriguing players who have time in their development path to get even more pro ready. But you're right. They came in with a lot of pro habits as it was.
Yeah. And these tournaments, you know, it's always about seeing what you have, where guys are at. So I definitely don't want to make it sound like I saw a bunch of, you know, fourth line NHLers skating around out there. You are 100% right. There's still, you know, very green. Still a lot of guys who are, you know, toolsy, have to hone it in. But I just felt like, and you know, credit to Mark Letestu as well, the new Colorado Eagles head coach who was coaching this group over the, you know, over the weekend. It seemed like he got them ready, and he had them. And I believe what he said, verbatim after the last game was not much more you could ask for from a coaching standpoint. So give credit to him as well. He had that group ready, no doubt.
Absolutely. And I think for him, it was a valuable learning experience to get familiar with these players himself. And so I viewed it at least less about them worrying about how to counter their opponents game by game, but rather just learning about themselves and getting a feel for what this identity needs to be, understanding where the level of compete needs to be. And I think that a lot of these young players rose to the occasion.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. Let's get into a couple of these guys in particular, just a few of the players that we had highlighted before going into the tournament. Just would love to get your thoughts.
Did you read my article?
I did.
Okay. I want to talk about everyone in that article.
Okay. So, all right. I'll tell you what. I'm going to do this instead.
We don't have to. I know
no.
The time commitment.
Well, no, but I'm going to change my source of where I'm pulling the guys that we're talking about here. So bear with me for 1 second here.
And you know why, too? I'll just address it at the top, too. Like, some of the players we wanted to talk about, we don't have as much to say, in my opinion.
Right.
Like, Maroš Čedlíka. I did not think showed very well in the one game that he played. It wasn't that he was a liability. I just expected a little bit more from him. He's dealt with injury trouble, so I won't be too hard on him, but he was someone that I wanted to have more to say in this notebook, and I ended up with nothing. Yeah. So that was a little bit disappointing. And Linus Funk getting hurt in that first game with an upper body injury, just not a player I was able to evaluate at all. Right. So a bit of a bummer, but he also isn't in this article for that reason.
So I'm going to run through here. I'm going to skip your honorable mentions off the top, but if we have time, we'll come back to them at the end. Let's start with the guy who maybe made the biggest physical impact early in the tournament, in Cooper Gay. It was something that he said he wanted to do. He wanted to be physical, wanted to be noticeable. He sent Gabe Smith of the Utah Mammoth over the boards, Megan, and made sure to, finish the hit, stuff him in for good measure. Your thoughts on Cooper Gay from the weekend?
I struggle because I liked him more in his AHL debut than I liked him in this tournament.
Interesting.
And so I think some of that is his style of play works a little bit better in an AHL game. I think in a rookie tournament, there is still opportunity for some players to showcase just like pure skill, right? And capitalize on that. And I think that what he does thrives a little bit more in the AHL. But I also think it's why we didn't see him in more AHL games. Mm. And that is, the physicality is as described. And so that continues to excite me about Cooper Gay.
He is 6'5", 223.
He is a powerful man. But I think what I felt was exposed as a bit of a vulnerability in this setting, I'm not going to get carried away because I liked him in his AHL debut, was his puck skill, his handling. It was a lot more limited than I expected it to be. And so I actually wanted to see him be a little bit more of an offensive impact, just seeing his college numbers and obviously scoring in his AHL debut. And in this environment, he didn't really pose an offensive threat. He was able to sometimes win pucks back, but he also lost them as easily as he got them. And so I just want to see a little bit more of Cooper Gay, because he's going to be dealing with highly skilled players at the pro level from this point on, right? And so that being a vulnerability, not being able to hold on to pucks for handling reasons, is going to be a little bit of a weakness for him then in terms of how he separates from some of these guys. But the physicality off the top is hard for other players to meet at this point. He's very good at using it effectively.
Overall, I'm with you. I thought he, well, I liked his energy, and he was a little bit everywhere in that first game against Utah in a good way. I'm with you. I liked what I saw out of him last year more than what I did this weekend. But hey, small sample size, anxious seam in main.
Exactly. Camp. Like I want to, you know, in his AHL debut, he strips the puck from, I think it was Luca Cagnoni, like a high end San Jose prospect. And so like there's puck skill there. And then obviously what he did with St. Thomas, he was very productive. So I don't think it's non-existent for him. It wasn't quite there for him this weekend.
Other physical force out on the ice for the Avs prospects got into a fight. Max Kuran, the way he threw his stick made me laugh on the fight. He tossed it a few feet, didn't just drop it.
I don't know how to explain Max Kuran because he's 6'3", so like he should be a physical force, but he is not using it to his advantage fully. And I think
the Mikko Rantanen effect.
That's an interesting comparable because he is only 19 years old, and I feel it's very important to make mention of that. I did not always love the mechanics of Taylor McCarr's skating, going back to development camps early with him, and it's emerged as one of Taylor McCarr's strengths now. And so what I'm about to say is critical of Kuran's skating. And it's, you look at him, he's a 6'3 guy. He's big. And I just don't think he's fully mastered how to leverage his skating because it kept him to the outside a lot in this tournament. But he's a very good passer. So that was the very positive takeaway. I can absolutely see why there's interest in him. Very great vision and great at finding seams, great in playing off of Christian Humphreys, finding Behrens on the power play. And especially in that Vegas game where Vegas was so good at managing their lanes and they were very aggressive in their own coverage that it was hard to find those seams. So that impressed me about Max Kuran and his passing ability. And he also showed in practice and then a little bit in game that he has a strong, powerful shot as well. And so looking at his size, that's not surprising, but I felt he because he is so good at finding those seams, deferred to the pass option rather than taking the shot. And so I'd like to see him find that balance of both as well, and then just continue to round out the skating, because at 19, there is so much room for growth there. I mean that in a very positive way, that building off of some of the high IQ passing vision that he has, he's still an intriguing player. He's just a bit a ways off because of that as well.
He looks like he's 12.
He's got a lot of time, you know, like he just finished high school classes, coursework. So he's got time.
Fifth round pick for the Colorado Avalanche last summer. All right, Megan, this was maybe the guy that I was the most just curious to see what he was out there. Alex Gagner. And you know, how well he moved. How did he engage physically? We talked about last week, clearly a defensive defenseman. There was one play, I mean, early in the tournament, where he made a really nice pinch, not only won the race and kept the puck in, but was able to kind of reverse hit the guy a bit. And I mean, like he didn't, Alex Gagner did not budge, a player from Utah hit the ice. So like, you know, in a really small vacuum, you see, oh, okay, that's what stands out to them.
Right.
What's the good? What's the bad?
It's a lot of good. And also to be expected, he's a bit raw. In two games at that next level, right? Yeah. The transition to the heightened pace of play, I think, just led to maybe some reads that were a bit delayed. And so overall, I also felt he was assessing what level of physicality was appropriate at this level. And so he seemed a little bit reserved and withholding with some of it. But he wasn't easily taken down either. So he's just a sheer physical force in his own right. And I think when he feels more of a comfort to exercise that, he's going to be so hard to play opposite of. I saw it even just in practice. I wrote in my article in him defending Cooper Gay, also 6'5", 1v1.
Yeah.
Cooper Gay could not find a way around Alex Gagner. And so what I loved, though, is the trust that was shown from Letestu in him in this tournament, kind of thrown into the fire. And so he was defending on the kill, leaned on very heavily there, including a 3-on-4. And then with the empty net goal late in the Vegas game, and he defended these perfectly. And so a lot of things in his raw tools down to his size, right? Like I'm classifying that as a raw tool.
Can't teach it.
That are obviously there for him. And it excites me. I think it's just going to be a matter of him getting those reps in and getting better acclimated to the pace and then really feeling comfortable and confident to use that physicality to the fullest extent.
I find it such an interesting call out. You know, you're like, you could tell he wasn't really sure, you know, how to use it yet. And, you know, you and I talked going into that tournament of what you don't want to see. And we were talking about this with Cooper Gay, kind of making the joke about getting into a fight and stuff like that. But, you know, we had talked about like what you don't want to see is guys going out of their way to lay a big hit, get into a fight if it's not what the moment, the situation calls for. So, you know, I was happy to see that Alex Gagner wasn't just out there trying to run guys over every chance he got. He was following, you know, making the right reads, playing within the system. Yeah, getting physical when needed. But again, he's another guy that I'm just going to be curious to see. I always love to see these guys go from rookie play, tournament practices, to jumping in with the vets where they have to dial that intensity up. You have to dial the speed up even more. I feel like that really gives you a great sense of where these guys are at in terms of their readiness. But I think I saw enough to understand why the Avs were interested in this guy.
Completely. Like in thinking about some of the delay with reads, something that specifically springs to mind is things that worked for him in college that clearly didn't work at this level. But this is also important for him to see that firsthand, feel it firsthand. And then what is a better tell of where he's at is how quickly he absorbs that and doesn't make that same mistake again. And so, you know, this was just a play in the ozone. He had possession of the puck, so not necessarily a defensive liability at this point, but he thinks he can stick handle his way out of this problem, and he can't. He's outmatched, outskilled, and is left with no options, and it leads to, you know, no longer having possession of the puck. And so it's one of those things that in the past he probably could have outhandled himself away from the wall and continued play. And it was just a good learning lesson for him.
I believe it was this next guy that we're about to talk about who mentioned it after one of the games. But just that, you know, even coming from Division One college, coming from the highest end major junior you can, you know, CHL, QMJHL, OH, you know, whatever. Even the rookie tournament is a massive step up in speed, in skill, in physicality. And I've always felt like it was a really nice intermediary between going straight from wherever you were playing before to having to jump right into main camp. Right. You get this kind of in between, but it's even still a big step up from what Alex Gagne was doing last year in college. The captain for the weekend, Hank Kempf, like I said, I believe it was him who mentioned, you know, it's just a lot faster, a lot more physical at this level. Your thoughts on the temporary captain for the Colorado Avalanche prospects?
That's adorable. I'll try to keep it brief, but Hank Kempf was a bright spot for a lot of simple reasons. You know, they're not necessarily the flashiest things, but he was very well-rounded. And so, one, I could see why they trusted him with the C. He was actually helping Alex Gagne on the kill. They used to play together in juniors, apparently. Yeah. And so he really did embrace the leadership role. But what I loved about him, too, was you can better appreciate the little things in hockey that you maybe take for granted at the NHL level. And that is a good and effective breakout. And so Hank Kempf was one of the only players who was not only effective on the breakout, but not making mistakes during it, too. There were some players who, in an attempt to transition play off ice, were turning over the puck. And so Hank Kempf, though making simple choices, was communicating with his teammates more obviously, too. And that kept everybody on the same page and helped to drive plays, play up ice. And so it's one of those little things that takes a mature player, and he really only got in a handful of games last year. So that impresses me to see just that much more polish, having jumped in those games with the Eagles. He made his playoff debut as well last year. So you can see the way that experience benefited him. He then emerges as a leader, not only on the penalty kill, just among this group, in terms of drilling into them the defensive habits that they're going to need. And he's really competitive, fully bought in player. So you see that in the way that he plays as well. And when he needed to, he stepped up into the play and helped to get them within one goal in this Vegas game. So it's one of those things where he even said it himself, defense first. But I love to see his willingness to get involved offensively as well.
This next guy, I'm you know, he's been someone we've actually talked about, excuse me, several times over the summer, because he's unique as of this exact moment within the Avs system, where he's one of the guys who was at University of Michigan and decided to go to major junior, got a little bit more playing time, was in a little bit more of a, you know, better developmental position. We talked to Brian Wilsey about him at the beginning of the summer. You know, you had highlighted him as a guy who, hey, made a kind of a business decision here and said, I'm going to go play major junior instead of college, get some more reps. And he scored a goal on a breakaway against Vegas on Sunday. I don't know what day it is anymore. Christian Humphreys.
I'm hyped.
All right, there we go. Say, what did you think of the seventh round pick, college to major junior transfer?
Well, that's a hard decision to make for a young person, a young player, because, you know, it has to feel very big, right? I think he made a great choice. He just got into so many games and more minutes, more opportunity with the Kitchener Rangers last year. Not a player who lacks confidence, but I think that was part of it, too, is to keep the confidence up, you just need to be given those opportunities. And so this is his first rookie tournament because he was, you know, with Michigan at the start of this last year. So seeing what I've seen in dev camps, he separates from this group because of his offensive gifts. And I still saw a very competitive player, so I don't want to take away from that either. He was very bought in, very passionate as well, sometimes leading to discipline issues. I don't necessarily hate to see it, right? Like, he's only 19 as well. You rein that in and you play with discipline, that passion can really serve you. So between the confidence and the offensive gifts, this is a player that ahead of the tournament, I said, look, I don't think this group is going to be made up of offensive juggernauts, but if there is somebody that I am looking to contribute offensively, it's Christian Humphreys. And it is because of those offensive gifts. I even joked, you know, he attempted the Michigan in practice days. He did not do the Michigan, but I almost prefer that the way that he found goals. No. The way that he found goals made sense for these games. That was not going to fly in this setting. And he still found ways to impact both games, right? Like, he scores the game winner against Utah, and then he gets the breakaway goal against Vegas. He actually has a second rush chance in that game, and he's at the forefront of all of the high danger opportunities because he's driving inside ice, and credit to Max Kuren finding him too, especially through very layered coverage in that Vegas game. They were finding each other all weekend, and so that's where, like, the passing ability of Kuren, absolutely great. But Christian Humphreys getting to the dangerous areas, being unafraid to play between the hash marks, it showed a lot of that confidence that I'm talking about. But he really read the moment of the game very well too, coming up with those goals late in games when they needed them. And so I think that shows maturity. The other thing I highlighted was in his own end, already some good habits that make me see a strong two-way player if he's really dedicated to that part of his game. You know, in the face-off dot, also very powerful, a lot stronger. Like, he looks, he's 5'11". He looks to me on the ice, though, like he's right at the six-foot mark. He plays big, he plays strong. It's not hulking physicality, but I think this is a part of his game that could be rounded out because the offensive gifts are fun. There's upside there that puts him in that weird Jean-Luc Foudy territory of, this could be a top six player, you know, one day. That's kind of where his skill set aligns right now. But if he can start building out the more third line habits, he will be better primed for a future NHL role. And he's got a big development year in the OHL ahead of him. Like, he still has that time in his path to continue working on those things. But I just love the puck skill from Humphreys. It's already very gifted at this level. And finding a way to put the puck in the back of the net against Cameron Whitehead was also just really great in net for Vegas on Sunday. Says a lot about where he's at.
I liked him. I liked the, like you said, I liked the puck skill a lot. All right, I'm trying to decide where I want to go with these last three, like which order I want to go in here, because I think these are the guys that folks are most excited about. Let's go Sean Behrens. Gets a goal. I believe it was in the first game. Looked good. Looked good out there, especially after missing an entire year. I think you don't have any choice but to be encouraged by what you saw to Sean Behrens, right?
Absolutely. I feel so sad that he missed this last year, but I think he did everything he could to make this best case scenario in terms of everything that he absorbed just in watching and being around the Eagles last year. Nothing will replicate game action, but I do think that in terms of how he processes the game, he still took away a lot from this last year being around the Eagles. And so I thought that his processing of the game at this pace of play was very encouraging with where it needs to be. And some of that's just a credit to Sean Behrens, who's such a high IQ player, that I think it's why he had such a good camp last year. That was straight from college as well. And so he really had no familiarity with that pace of play other than an Eagles game, a single Eagles game. And so for him to have had that polish even then was encouraging. And I think he's just building on that. And so, you know, the rest is in Sean Behrens' hands, but I brought up that there is potentially an opening on the left side for the Avs at the start of this year. You know, I'm not penciling him in for a full-time position at the NHL level out the gate, but I think that he's such a smart player that he makes good decisions. And so I think that is going to earn some trust here at the start. He kills penalties. He doesn't need to, but he can quarterback a power play, right? Like with the Avs, obviously wouldn't be necessary, but it's a testament to his vision. He's also a really great skater. Like, he's not going to be Sam Girard level skating,
right.
But it really is effective in getting the puck up ice and beating players in races, gaining entry this way. And so he is still such a strong skater that it's worth mentioning.
Sam Girard was out at the golf tournament yesterday, playing. So again, that's something that I'm sure there'll be a few of us that'll key in on that tomorrow, talking to Jared Bednar. But until we hear that Sam Girard is fully in the clear, you know, he has been skating in a red jersey in some of these skates leading up. We will continue to assume that there is at least the potential the Avs could need some help there on the left side. All right, we got two guys left that we're going to go over here. I'm going to leave the one that I've gotten the most questions about that I think Avs fans are most excited for last. So we're going to Gavin Brindley here.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yep. Okay. So we're going to Gavin Brindley here. Only played in one of the games, but Eagles head coach Mark Letestu, you got the quote right here. I might as well just read it verbatim. Quote, I thought he was one of the best players at all times. He looked very comfortable. This was a good first step being a leader amongst his peers at his age. I thought he proved that he belonged at main camp with the main roster. Mark Letestu was so impressed with Gavin Brindley, didn't even play him in the second game.
And you know, he is very familiar with Gavin Brindley. Right, so I guess it was also, I know what Gavin Brindley is. I do not know what these other guys are. But in his own right, Gavin Brindley separated from his peers that much too. And so it was a very righteous decision, in my opinion. And I really felt vindicated. I don't know if I'm just seeing it this way because I said it, but that was very Toyota RAV4 behavior from Gavin Brindley, like in the best way. The skating, it was dynamic, and he was a puck hound, and he was causing problems because of it, and also evading problems because of it. Mm-hmm. And I think against an insanely large Utah team, he held up fine physically, like sometimes muscled off the puck, mm-hmm. but more often than not, because of his dynamic skating, able to come away with them. And so as a result, I think that he did drive possession of the puck just in those hardworking habits that he showed. That motor was exactly as advertised, you know, the 200 foot game exactly as advertised. I think I would have, no, I'm actually pretty happy with what he does. Like, oh, I would have liked to see. No, that's exactly as advertised. He held up very well. You know, the questions around the size, I think, will persist at this level.
Yeah.
But he alleviated a lot of the concerns that I have just in what I saw firsthand.
Well, and he in the game, again, he only played one game. I saw him getting to the middle of the ice. I saw him going to the net. I saw him being aggressive. I think it was, like you said, we had talked about sometimes you have that tendency for undersized players to maybe play a little bit scared, maybe play, you know, stay along the perimeter, stay along the wall. I didn't feel like he did that. I really liked a lot of what I saw. Like you said, I'm saying this to get ahead of it because you just said the questions about the size are going to continue to persist. There are going to be fans out there. They're going to see the size and not care what he does. He had one play in particular where I thought you saw kind of the full. I don't know the right word to find here. He made a great play in the neutral zone to peel a puck off somebody.
Dmitry Simashev.
It was Simashev,
high end prospect, make look a little foolish.
And he made, I mean, he made a great play, great read to take a puck off of Simashev. Drives right back into the zone, makes this really nice, like, in shooting position, small little curl, brings the puck in near his feet, and is able to kind of, you know, he curls away from pressure, and then he just got drilled, and he lost the puck, and, you know, play went the other way. And you and I were talking about it at the time. I said, man, that was almost perfect.
Right.
That was almost perfect. And then he did. He got kind of muscled off the puck. So still 20 years old. You know, there's still a part of this that he's going to have to figure out how to play with his size and angles and, you know, protecting the puck and curling away and using his skating ability and all that in the right way. But you saw it.
Yes.
Right. You saw it's like, okay, he can be effective. It's just that last, you know, pick your head up a half second earlier, you know, make that curl away from danger and from pressure a half second earlier, and you're going to get yourself into good position. But you saw it. You saw the potential.
The key to everything with Gavin Brindley is using his skating to his advantage. It's going to help get him in and out of traffic, in and out of battles more quickly. And he's going to win races to the puck. He's going to win races into the zone, gain zone entries as a result of this. Like, it's going to be what helps to separate his game and also ensures that there is a spot available to him at the NHL level one day. So he just has to continue alongside the smart positioning to leverage both of these things, build out both of these things. I think reps too is just going to help him get
absolutely
better familiar with what different paths are available to him, because they're going to look different for him because he is an undersized player.
The prospect, and this we'll round up prospects here with this one, but Megan, I've probably gotten more questions about this guy. How is he looking? What's he up to? Do you think he's got a shot to make the roster? What can we expect? Nikita Prishepov. Maybe from a like fan hype perspective, might be number one on the prospect rankings right now. And it's because he was a seventh round pick that was able to jump straight into the NHL and have a positive impact. You know, he didn't look wildly out of place. I'm not saying he's the number one ranked prospect, but like I said, there's a lot of fan buzz around this player right now, and I'm not going to tell people they're wrong for being excited about a guy like Nikita Prishepov.
I'm still excited about Nikita Prishepov, only 21, so still a very young player. But I think in terms of NHL readiness, it's still just a hair away from being ready.
Yep.
And I'm encouraged, though, by what I saw, because
it was what made his debut so impressive last year was it was like, this guy should not be NHL ready, and for him to hang.
Late round pick, coming from the draft, getting in some games, playing regularly with the Eagles. Like, you don't necessarily always see that even when they do get reassigned. A role was available to him because he earned it.
Yep.
And he ended up being a big impact player for the Eagles in their playoff run, down to, you know, he got a little banged up. And so all that to say, really big first year for Prishepov. So my expectation was kind of high for him going into this tournament as well. And so I thought, given some of the offensive talent that I saw at the end of last year, that he might make more of an offensive impact. So I was maybe a little disappointed that that didn't break through in this tournament, especially because he does have a lot of the pro experience under his belt already. But I don't want to take away from where he did appear to take a very big step forward, and that was playing with an edge, playing with some might, because I saw that, you know, at the end of this last year. But with Prishepov and a lot of young players, it's a matter of consistency, right? Like, are they doing this every game? And just out the gate, what I saw from Prishepov is he'll be a nightmare to play against.
Yeah.
And so I'm so encouraged by that, because one, you said it earlier, like, you can't teach that. You can't necessarily teach that. And if he can kind of marry some of the things that he did well at the AHL level last year, in terms of creating opportunities offensively, because I do think there are offensive gifts there that weren't shown in the tournament that absolutely we saw last year. So strong in the dot. And I know they're building that out for him too, right? Ivan might have a leg up just in terms of a year advantage on him, but Prishepov, if he plays as hard and as physical as he did, that might separate from Ivan, who wasn't shy about that in his own game, but it was different out of Prishepov.
Yeah. Like I said, I think when you see a kid, like you said, being able to go straight from being not only a seventh round pick, a late seventh round pick, to jump in, you see, hey, there's tools there. There's the smarts there for this guy to be able to hang at the pro level.
Totally.
But like you said, still a lot of ground to cover.
A lot of care. Just want to, you know, I said baby Val at one point. I don't remember if it was even on a hot mic, but I love to see the power then at which he plays with, the bite that he plays with, and the care that he has in preparing for games. So, you know, baby Val is maybe a stretch, but I like it, and I'm sticking with it.
Point taken. Well, and I actually almost said, give me your final thoughts on these prospects, but I'm actually not going to do that, because they aren't gone yet. We're going to get to see them here over the next couple days.
You can't take them away from me.
I can't take them away from you quite yet. So we will check back in on where some of these guys are at. Maybe is some of the, you know, reassignments to Eagles camp and you know, major junior teams and stuff like that comes along. Maybe we'll pick off some of these guys one by one and get some of your overall camp thoughts on them.
But just know, I'm very proud.
Yes, of course. We know you are. All right. Well, so let's turn our focus just a little bit here. And you know, we don't have to go very long, because we're going to do another show tomorrow after Media Day from Ball Arena.
Yes.
We're going to really get into previewing this this camp day, or excuse me, this camp week that we've got coming up here. But I just want to address a couple things here before we get to tomorrow with Media Day. One is we talked about it a little bit off the top, talking to these guys yesterday. I think there is a bit of a chip on their shoulder. I think guys are, you know, pissed off from last year, and it really feels like we talked to three guys yesterday, and all three of them said, we felt like we had a special group and we want a chance to run that back. A lot of familiar faces this year versus last year, and a quiet summer. Where are you at with this group a day before Media Day, before we get to get in there and talk to them?
Yeah, it's a position I've held now the last couple of months, that I feel this is one of the strongest teams entering camp that I've seen in a long while. And some people don't hear the caveat of, you know, entering camp, right? Because even the 2022 team looked very different after the deadline, before going to the playoffs. And so to have this strong of a lineup come, you know, September, whatever, is very encouraging because they have small problems to resolve, and there's temporary problems to resolve too. You know, things that are just not going to be an issue even in a couple months time, right, that they just need some answers for right now. And so that's a very good problem to have. And I'm excited for multiple storylines, but I'll key in on Gabriel Landeskog. Just the addition of having the captain back around his team on the ice regularly and as a solidified top six option. To me, it's significant that the front office really ran it back as much as possible, because to me, it's also a reflection of their trust in where Gabriel Landeskog is at. If they had nerves about what the year holds for him, they probably would have gotten a top six winger this offseason through dramatic means. And so in not doing that, I think it points to so much faith in where Landeskog is at. And that's huge. Like, there is a past version in time where just getting Landeskog back was the biggest difference maker you could imagine. Mm-hmm. But they have a Landeskog, and now they have a Mackenzie Blackwood and Wedgwood tandem, and they have Brent Burns in the mix on the back end, where they almost are overwhelmed with options going into camp.
And I asked Josh Manson about Brent Burns yesterday morning, and I said, you know, that's a guy who eats a lot of minutes. Where do you think he's going to be the most beneficial to this, you know, this back end? And he goes, everywhere. He's going to be huge for us everywhere. Megan, I'm with you. This is the best I've felt about a group heading into camp in a while. And I'm going to tell you why. As you just pointed out, Gabe Landeskog was there yesterday, was doing a hit with Altitude Radio, was playing in the tournament, just back around the guys, laughing, making jokes. And Val Nichushkin was there. Same thing, playing in the tournament.
Did you see the Survivor stuff they were
doing? I saw it. The players and wives, Avs Survivor. I thought it was great. But, like, they're doing that. We're not sitting here talking about, okay, well, when Val Nichushkin comes back in, how do you assimilate him back into this room? Are the guys going to accept him? Are they going to be mad? Are they able to, all right, well, what do you do about Landeskog? I know you and I never really had this conversation, but, you know, do you name a temporary captain? What do you do? How do you address this? What's the leadership group? There's none of that. These guys are showing up and getting to work, coming together, getting on the ice, hanging out. Like you said, you've got Scott Wedgwood that everybody is such a fan of. You got Mackenzie Blackwood, who has a lot to build on, I think, from last year. We are just sitting here talking about the team, them showing up, getting on the ice, going to the golf. We aren't talking about the other stuff. It's all about what's on the ice. None of the extracurriculars. And that's what I think is so exciting. Then on top of that, it's exactly what you said. You've got minor problems to adjust here, to tweak. It's small. You got to find some depth help. You know, you got to find an extra D. You're in a pretty good spot. Now, of course, injuries, things like that, we can't see into the future and predict anything like that. But on paper, heading into camp, I feel really good about where this group is at. Not only do I love the top six, the bottom six, you can see the potential of, and you can see one last tweak here, there. But I also just love the quiet that surrounds the team right now.
Ross Colton seems in good spirits, just in all of the content I'm seeing and seeing him back on the ice. You know, if the guys for these kind of unofficial captain skates, and I had really big concern for what that third line would look like and how can they better support Ross Colton. And I just feel better about it than I did, like, I don't know, 3 weeks ago.
Right. And I just want to call out one quick thing here. You had mentioned, I think it was about... it was right after they re-signed Brock Nelson. And you had said, hey, the other layer of this is you just were able to bring some, you were able to attract a free agent to come back. I think this was you. So I apologize if I'm saying this and you're like, that wasn't me. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'll take credit for it.
You know, you were able to attract a free agent to come back. And the Avs, while not impossible, they have had their fair share of big free agent signings over the last, you know, decade plus, you know, in this newer era, salary cap era, the Avs have had a harder time attracting guys to come here. And we've heard too many stories about, like, they were the runner up.
Yeah.
They got outbid by this other team.
Giroux, right? JT Miller.
Right. Jack Eichel, you know, I know that was a trade, but you know, like there was a lot of instances
where Sidney Crosby, I'm just
where, you know, they've been, oh, they were close to getting that big player to come back. But, you know, Brock Nelson straight up said, like, the team, the culture, how special this group felt, the players that are here. He said, if you want to win now, there is nowhere better for a player. And I don't think that's insignificant.
No, Brock Nelson had a say in this, right? And there's probably more money on the table in free agency too, especially like we've talked about some of the silly contracts we've seen over this summer. And so I think that he could have commanded more in the open market if he wanted it. So you're right. It is significant. He wants to be here. Job is not finished in his eyes. And I am excited by that because I don't think we saw the full extent of Brock Nelson. Like, mm-hmm. I think we heard the words 30 goal scorer and expected him to score all 30
right away.
And so I'm excited to see, though, that level of production in a full season, starting with a little bit of stability coming out of camp, because I don't think we've seen the best of Brock Nelson in Colorado.
I'm with you. Megan, we're going to wrap it up on this. Our shout out to our guy, Brennan Vogt, who I think has just moved into family sports at this point, Megan. I hope he's got a comfy chair and a cot with him or something. He has put out a few reports over the last couple days that Mackenzie Blackwood is dealing with a little bit of an ailment. To my knowledge, he's not dealing with any kind of, like, you know, officially listed injury. We saw Mackenzie Blackwood in the locker room last week. He came walking through, you know, laughing, making jokes with people. You know, him and Corey Mastasak go back a little bit. Corey has covered him in a couple different stops. So, you know, he stopped there and chatted with Corey for a few minutes, you know, just casually. He's around. He's getting on the ice. He may be dealing with a tweak on something again at the golf tournament yesterday. I also believe he was part of the Avs Survivor Games that they were playing the day before the golf tournament. So while something to maybe keep an eye on as we head in towards camp here, folks that I've asked around to, people that I've talked with, nothing official for Mackenzie Blackwood on the injury front right now, but there's definitely going to be a couple guys as we trickle into camp here that are dealing with little tweaks and ailments, and there's a chance that Mackenzie Blackwood may find himself on that list as well. But I just wanted to put that out there. I've gotten a few questions. I have not been told that Mackenzie Blackwood is officially dealing with an injury, and we have seen him around the rink, you know, in good spirits recently.
Yeah, I feel a greater confidence of Sam Girard's availability being up in the air just because he's on the ice in a no-contact jersey and just the stall situation in the main room there. I will reserve judgment on Mackenzie Blackwood, though.
Yeah, until we see it. But I just wanted to float that out there because, like I said, I've gotten a few tweets and DMs and stuff about that. Anything else, Megan? Like I said, we're going to do a pod from Ball Arena tomorrow after media day. So we'll have heard from everybody. We'll have all that sound. And we'll really start to dig into what we're expecting in the next couple days of camp. Any final thoughts?
No.
That's gonna do it for today, folks. Like I said, we'll be back at it tomorrow. We're not fully sure on timing yet. We know that things are getting going around 9 a.m. The list of players that I've been told that's gonna talk is maybe one or two more than what we've had in the past. So we're not fully sure how that timing is going to space out, whatever they're going to do, but we will be recording a pod right after and then getting that live out to you guys as quickly as we possibly can. We may have a couple small tweaks to the scheduling here as the season gets going. Megan and I have talked about potentially moving the show, you know, around with time a little bit, maybe moving it up just a little bit. We're not fully sure yet. We're going to get into these next couple days, get a grasp for where the schedule is falling and make that official. But Megan, God, I always love being able to talk with you after some prospect stuff, because you just you help even me just get so caught up on where we're at with all of this. So that's gonna do it for today, folks. She's Megan Angley. I'm Jesse Montagna. We got Ashley back there behind the glass again today, just continuing to crush it here as she gets settled in at Gorilla. We love having her around and cut the show again today behind the glass. That's going to do it, folks. We'll be back at it tomorrow. You made it. You made it through media days tomorrow. The offseason is over. We are back in it. Congratulations, everybody. We will talk to you from Ball Arena tomorrow. Have a good one.